Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Eavesdrop, where you can be a butterfly on the wall and listen in on my conversations. Today, we have Jen Kreiner, who is out in Montana. She is an ADHD life coach, and she works with adults and parents and people in the workplace. She works with executive function and ADHD. She does a great job. Jen has coached me for quite a while. We coached each other, and she's just an amazing person, full of knowledge. I'm so happy that we're going to be able to share with you today. And you can find Jen on stonesthrowcoaching.com. She's on Facebook, and you can find her on LinkedIn. So today we're going to talk about that magic space, that space of pausing. What can pausing do for people with ADHD? And what do we do in that moment that we pause? And it's a very small amount of time. Sometimes, other times it can be, you know, when we take time to really pause and take some real time to do it. So Jen knows a lot about that amazing, that magical little pause, and kind of take a walk down our own paths as we've explored some of these areas too. Welcome, Jen. I'm so happy that you're here.
Oh, Janine, you're so sweet. Thank you. That was such a beautiful introduction. I appreciate that. Happy to be here.
So we were going to talk about that magic moment, the pregnant pause, the moment where we can do so much work, but with ADHD, we often completely miss that opportunity. Tell me about that pause to you and what that space means for you and what you've seen in coaching.
Yeah, I think the more exposure I get to personal growth, as well as working with clients, it is clear that there is so much possibility and, as you say, magic in that space that we have to be so intentional about creating for ourselves. It is a very atypical thought to pause, to slow down. We go 100 miles a minute, whether in our behaviors, in our minds, there really is very little attention typically given to that commitment of space. I was just joking about this, but instead of being my title, ADHD coach, potentially space coach, because there's so much potential in awareness when we learn and create that neural pathway to give ourselves that gift of space.
And I know that you, like me, were diagnosed later in life. Prior to being diagnosed, how did you use that space as opposed to after being diagnosed and working through coaching?
Well, I would say that I never even allowed a space. I was diagnosed at 42, and it was much later into management of ADHD where I kind of had this light bulb moment of constantly either having content in or content out. I was always putting something in or always putting something out. So whether that's, you know, listening to music, listening to a podcast, watching TV, reading something, having a conversation with somebody, it's just a constant flow and very little pause. And what I realized is that this is because that pause, that time with ourselves, is so uncomfortable. And we, as a commonality, a thread, that discomfort is something that we don't know how to handle. We don't know what to do with it. We don't know what to do with negative feelings that come up. And so because we were never taught how to self-soothe in healthy ways, we develop tools of our own to cope with that. And so going, being kind of like walking heads, dissociated from our bodies, dissociating from those feelings is how we learn to manage, as well as a number of other, you know, tools that you need at the time, because that's what you know to feel better. But drinking, smoking, scrolling, shopping, gambling, any of those, you know, kind of different behaviors is how we learn to self-manage that negative feeling, that discomfort in that space. And so what I've learned is that that discomfort is normal. And what happens next? What happens if I just allow it, regardless of where it's coming from, what experience or circumstance in the past or present is bringing it up? It's in that space we just allow that discomfort and we sit with it.
It's so hard to do, to just sit with the discomfort and be okay with that. And when you were talking, it made me think of metaphor about people, some people with ADHD, a lot of us with ADHD. So you get a bunch of people standing in front of a burning house. Your neurotypical people, they're going to take a step back and they're going to assess the situation and they're going to decide what to do, right? And then you're going to have, somebody who completely freezes and has no idea what to do. And then you got a lot of our ADHD folks who are just going to run directly into the fire without even thinking. And so when you said, that we don't take that space, we skip that whole step of stepping back and analyzing what's going on, which is a really important step rather than just jumping into the fire. Yeah, that rings very true to me.
Let me just add there that that's a great metaphor. And the idea of analyzing a situation is that we also don't pay attention to what's coming up for us in that situation. So in that burning building, we are thinking about, everybody in there. The first stop that's a learned stop is what is happening. So that burning building, there's a situation. I have to take a step back and pay attention to how I'm feeling before I can take action to support others. And that's, I think, the most true when it comes to your personal relationships. It's important at work, but it is very important with your kids and very important with your partner.
Tell me more about that, about how
Ooh.
that's important in your relationships, that space, that moment of being able to reflect where we have such a difficult time doing that. What are the benefits of doing so?
Yeah, I mean, personally for myself, I would say that it was always just this impulsive thought process around what the other person is doing. Maybe they're doing this to me. This is, not even going to the place of what can I control and what can't I control. It's just like completely just paying attention to the situation itself. So with the skills that I have learned now, it's like this situation is happening. This is the fact of that situation. And in that pause, I go inside, I turn inward. And let's say your child had a hard day at school or something, and it's just like all you want to do is just see and be there, to help them feel better. But instead, that first stop has to be with you. It's like, this is making me feel helpless. I feel helpless in this situation. And to really, instead of resist that feeling of helplessness, to allow it, because then it enables us to have the empathy, the compassion that, the child needs, because they don't need us to fix it, even though that's what we want to do. So that's, I think, an example of using emotional processing and emotional regulation tools, is to validate our experience and that it makes sense, to like have that global understanding. If this was a friend and this was happening to a friend, that makes sense that you feel helpless. That's your kid. Or if you are in an argument, having conflict with your partner and you're feeling angry about something they said, to instead of to shoot that anger outward, to go inward and recognize, I should be feeling this way. This hurts. This would be hard for anybody. And to allow yourself to expand and make space literally in your body for that anger, as opposed to resist it, because when we resist our big emotions, they persist.
Well, and by doing that, I feel like you kind of reduce the response because you call it by name, right? Instead of just firing back that anger, like you said, something in the Bible, I think, that talks about if you can name a demon, you can control it, right? And it's kind of the same thing. I'm naming my feelings. I'm naming how I'm feeling. And by naming it, I am more able to control it. And I know, like what you were saying about relationships, I know with me, when I was able, because I have a lot of issues with RSD, and so I had to learn to pause before responding in a defensive manner to a comment or to some sort of imagined rejection from my spouse. And that pause gave me time to look at what are the other possibilities here? What is really going on here? And being able to see in that time that I might have a skewed vision or response to what's actually going on. So yeah, that's another thing in that split moment where you can stop yourself and say, think. You know, step back and think. What do you do to help you remember, like, to do that when you're in that moment?
You know, honestly, like at first when I realized that creating space is really like the only way to grow and build these skills, I was like, I need a tattoo. I need a tattoo front and center that I can look at my hand or look somewhere, and that I just, you know, kept repeating that. But I think that that's the beauty of creating, you know, new neural pathways is it's just habit formation. You know, a metaphor that I use is that creating a new neural pathway is like forging a new trail in the woods. You've always taken this one trail. It's clear. You can see the path. You know where it goes. When you decide that that view isn't for you anymore and you want to find a new trail and the view is much better, the first time you go down it, beautiful, it's great. You head out, and then when you want to go down it again, it is so hard to find that trailhead. You cannot even see where it starts because it's not been trodden yet. And so that's that repetition piece, is that giving yourself so much grace around when you kind of revert back to old habits. But then you just know that that's the view you want, and that's the view that fits your life better. And so, yeah, I would say it has become something that is so integral in how I react to, just like you said, like something hits you like a wall suddenly that somebody said, whether it's real or perceived. And so to give yourself that moment, that breath. But I would say that that's a big one, is, you know, reconnecting with your body, taking breath in that moment to just be with yourself. Ask for space if you're with other people. You know, I need some time to process this if that's what you need. But ultimately, it's just advocating for yourself and giving yourself the time to do what works for you. And I think we say that all the time in our coaching practices, is what works for me is not going to necessarily work for somebody else, and that you're the expert on your own life. And so for me, it was just a matter of having awareness in the moment is so hard. Giving yourself the space in the moment is so hard. And it's after the fact. And that is also another time to step away and pause for reflection. It's not something natural. It doesn't come easy, but then it gives us more opportunity to realize, you know, what happened, what worked, what we wish was different, and how we want to show up next time. And that's just something that you just do over and over in a way that works for you.
So really, we're kind of talking about two different kinds of space as far as like that very small fraction of a second of time between a trigger and a response, and giving yourself a pause in between there, which a lot of us, we don't do. I have a client though who uses a technique, has started using a technique where he knows what it's like to be triggered. He knows what he feels when he's being triggered. And so he has started snapping a rubber band whenever he feels that trigger. And then that reminds him to stop and think. Over time, he probably won't need the rubber band anymore. But right now, that's his, hey, stop and think. But then we're also talking about that really important space that we give ourselves when we're reflecting. Which is really tough for people with ADHD because sometimes, well, let's be honest, a lot of times it goes in a very negative direction, because we have a lot of negative self-talk. So, being able to reflect and be honest with ourselves without being unfair to ourselves is another aspect of that space that makes it very uncomfortable because once you start saying nice things to yourself, it feels weird and it's hard to do. So, like with that reflection thing, that is something that you have to build in kind of naturally as well.
Yes, I would say so in that little moment between a situation and how we choose to show up is the difference between a reaction and a response. And so a response is a thought, how I choose with intention to come to this moment. And then in that kind of after period when we feel ready to sit with everything in that reflection is just it's a mindfulness of all of the things. And so agreed that it is a learned process. And it is, honestly, I have to say for myself, I could have read every single book telling me that that is, the path I have to take. But the verbal processing piece that comes with coaching that allows me to walk through a situation that happened and really evaluate cognitively in a different way than I just allow those thoughts to swirl in my head. And so employing different tools like verbal processing through coaching, thought downloads, which is just a brain dump, literally just putting it all out there, when things are swirling in your mind, it's often we lose sight of what is in our control. And when we put so much energy outside of that is when anxiety, overwhelm, burnout, all of these things start to happen. And I think something else that happens in that reflective space and that happened big time for me was evaluation of capacity, just as an individual, as a parent, as a working professional and community member. It is like an evaluation of, because I can do anything, I just can't do everything. And when we're doing everything, we lose the opportunity to give that space and commit to that reflection for ourselves. And so that was, I think, one of the second things I did in order to maintain presence in my life is where do I need to delete things? Who do I owe what to? And putting myself first felt so selfish. There's so much guilt to overcome there. But that was just a learned toxic response that was, protective at one point in my life. But now it's, me first and taking care of myself. And then I have so much more to give everybody else in my life.
As I was listening to you, another thought came into my head, and I'm just wondering, do you, when you sit with your feelings or go back and reflect on a situation or something that has happened, is there a template that you run through in your head, or do you just feel the feelings? What happens during that reflection time in your head?
Yeah, so I learned a tool called SURF. It's an acronym, and I don't think I ever would have, if somebody said sit with your feelings, I don't know if I would even know what that means. But the way I think about it now is it's emotions are ultimately just a wave that you have to ride. And that's a wave that I think now I envision it rolling through my body. And so SURF stands for stop. So something's happening, your client snaps the rubber band, he stops, that's the pause. So stop. So then there's no impulsive behavior, there's no impulsive words that come out, and you're giving that moment to yourself. And then you is unfold. So allow that feeling. So if it's like this hot anger that you can find in your chest, allow it to be there, but then also to expand your body, ground where you are, if you're standing, if you're sitting, feeling the chair beneath you, feeling your feet underneath you, and expanding your body, and allowing that sensation ultimately, an emotion is a physical sensation, to roll through your body. R is recede. After you allow that feeling to unfold through your body, you really can take note of how it has receded, the intensity of it. And that's when you can move into the space of F, which is finding it. F is find. So then you can find that emotion. So even if it's, you know, sometimes there's a layer of what we think we're feeling, but then really it's coming from somewhere else. So I'm feeling an immediate sense of anger, but then really it's shame from some experience that I've had that just sits with me. So that kind of defense mechanism of anger comes first. And then I truly realize that it's something different. So allowing yourself to find a name, like you said, name that feeling gives you more control back. And then
nice. So like, I know when I reflect on a situation, I try to step outside of the situation. Because like when you're in it, you're so emotionally involved, it's really hard to see what has happened. And so I'll reflect, but then I'm also trying to identify my feelings. And I'll say, was I really angry? Or what is the real feeling? And I question myself, you know, is that really the feeling that I'm feeling, the emotion that I'm feeling? And a lot of times you find out no, or, you know, I'm not angry about what I thought I was angry about. So what's underneath that trigger hard response that you're having is oftentimes not the surface emotion. You have to get deeper.
Yeah. I love that you said that, you know, ultimately answering your own questions. If your brain throws a question to you, answer it. Like that process is all encompassing, because then it's also thinking of it, like the mindset that goes with the feeling. And so people are always talking about, you know, mindset management, and it can only work if you allow the feelings that cause that initial thought. Mm-hmm. The only way that you can reframe it is after you process that emotion, and then you can move forward with intention. So I do believe in, you know, the thought train. We're a station, the thoughts are coming in at a million a second, and we get to decide which one sticks around, which one gets to stay at the station.
Yes. Sometimes it's really hard to, I don't know, like, 'cause when I started working on space this way in my coaching and stuff, I found it was really hard for me to acknowledge the fact that I didn't have bad feelings and good feelings. I just had feelings. I had emotions, and not labeling those emotions as good, bad, or otherwise. And so that was a struggle for me, because like growing up, you, first of all, if you have emotions, you keep them to yourself. And second of all, you don't get angry. You don't have certain emotions because they're not polite emotions, right? Or they're bad emotions. And so in that reflection, what can you do? What can we do as people who are just starting to do this? And we're like, I'm mad, and I shouldn't be mad, because being mad is a bad thing. And so it's hard to reflect around that if you're judging your own emotions.
Yeah. And just like you talked about, it's like, that's a voice that has been implanted through experience. And so recognizing whose voice is that, because that's not my voice. And as I tell my clients, all emotions are welcome. And I would also like to echo that good, bad emotion. Being human, there's probably going to be, you know, even a majority of emotions that don't feel good. And for a lot of ADHDers, even good, I'm air quoting, good emotions don't feel good to us. A compliment, right? Like that does not feel good. It's a learned thing to accept that gift from somebody. Our successes, when we achieve a goal so quick, we just skip right over it. Like don't even give ourselves time to celebrate, because it's uncomfortable. We just need to keep moving. What one of the things early on that I put into practice was when I'm eating breakfast and lunch specifically, to sit without a book, without my phone, without the computer in front of me. And if I'm not with another person, to just pay attention to my food, be mindful of that 10, 15 minutes So hard.
I was gonna say
So
that
hard.
sounds so hard because
So
there's so
hard.
much. It's like meditating, and I don't, that's the ultimate space, right? When you give yourself that space to meditate, people with ADHD have a really tough time focusing
Yeah.
on one thing, let alone on nothing, right? And
Absolutely.
so it sounds to me like, you're kind of using your food as a meditation because for us, focusing on one thing is meditation if we can reach that place, right?
Yeah, and it also is like embracing this like level of tolerance for patience. So I feel like I'm just like growing my tolerance of that slowness. And it made sense, like when I would do yoga, how much I hated how slow certain things were, how much time you spent on your breath. Like, come on, come on, let's get to the, let's get to the point. Well, that now I know that is the point. The point is being with yourself. The point is the breath. And I remember the very first yoga class I took, I was in my young 20s. I was a mom, and the last pose, the death pose, Shavasana, I'm like laying in it. And I'm like, when in life do we ever just lay on the floor relaxed like this with nothing? And it was such a weird, weird feeling. But yeah, I would say, being able to build in little moments like that, and meditation can be a really intimidating practice, I think, for people, but it can be whatever you need it to be. It is, our wins when we're making changes is like the tiniest small step you can make. Can you sit in silence for 2 minutes with your eyes closed, paying attention, scanning your body for tenseness and just relaxing? That is a win. That is a step towards change.
Absolutely. When you do take advantage of those moments, I know for me, just taking like even that millisecond to step back calms the emotion before I even like identified it or anything. But if I give myself permission to step back and not act immediately, because I think a lot of us, we just something happens, we respond, we act, we're very responsive people. But there's a certain amount of release just in saying it's okay for me to step back from this for a second and look at it. I
Yeah.
don't know if you have that same feeling or.
Yeah, I think that in general, there are so many times where we learn to give ourselves permission. And what does that mean for us? Because it seems like it seems weird or uncomfortable to not say something in, immediate reaction to something that was said to you, let's say. It is very normal for atypical, neurotypical people to take time if there's something that hits them a certain way. And so it's just giving yourself permission to design however you need that process and that response to be what works for you.
Yeah, and it's so different for everybody. It just for me, the just stepping back and giving myself that second is just very, it's calming. It's like, oh, you have permission to think about this for a second. Because I don't know about you, but if a situation arises, any situation where there might need to be something that is solved or fixed, my first response is to jump right in and fix it. A lot of times I misinterpret the situation and fix something that didn't need to be fixed, or start trying to fix something that's not mine to fix. So, like, I give you an example. I had a situation this last weekend where I got like very upset and triggered by a situation. And then I finally, I said, take a minute, think about what's going on. And I said, this isn't mine to fix. In that reflective time, I was able to say, I don't have to be the one to fix this because this isn't mine to fix. Where before I would have gone immediately into fixed mode. I'd have been making phone calls. I'd have been talking to people. I'd have been doing, and I was able to separate from it by using that space.
That's awesome. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Not my circus, not my monkeys. And a lot of times you're going to find out, when you do stop and step back, you've misinterpreted. A lot of times you've misinterpreted, and at least for me, that's what happens a lot of times. It's like because I have that RSD response where
Yeah.
it's like That was a rejection, and I automatically misinterpret what's going on. And then I go into fix it mode because I want that person to, like me and make sure that, everything is okay with us. And rather than stepping back and saying, is this relationship in any kind of danger? Is this a reason to blow, your life up here right now? And if you really look at it, you're like, yeah, I was about to respond in such a over the top way that I really didn't need to do.
Yeah, we could do a whole podcast on relationships and our internal narrative that's occurring. It's just we are very creative people, which is a positive in so many ways. But then with those ruminating thoughts, we will spin the tale that you just wouldn't believe. And so, just like you said, finding evidence, not making assumptions, being direct, advocating for yourself, asking for clarification, these are all skills that we typically just don't have to employ.
Yeah, and it's so funny how a lot of neurotypical people, they are very good at taking a step back before, something happens. But it's learned. You can learn it. And that's the real big thing that I want people to take away from this conversation is that using the space and giving yourself the space and really being intentional about it is not something that comes innately for everybody, but it is something that you can learn to do. And once you've learned how to do it, like you said, it becomes really automatic, and it improves your ability to, first of all, regulate your emotions and recognize what's happening in your body, but also gives you better communication with the people around you. And also sometimes it's going to stop some of that impulsive behavior that gets us in trouble.
And the piece about just like awareness of everybody around you and wanting to maintain almost just like a hyper vigilance and sensitivity to all of that, creating space for yourself gives you time, energy, and tools to build this new self-concept ultimately. That realizes you're not responsible for everybody. You couldn't possibly be responsible for everybody.
Yeah, we maybe need to do an episode on the circle of control.
Yes, I would love that.
Another really good one. Well, Jen, I have one more question for you. And I'm wondering if you were able to talk to your 25-year-old self about using space and being reflective, what would you say?
I would share information about what self-validation means to learn that your experience, to trust that your experience is your experience. Nobody else is responsible for giving you the check mark on, yep, that's happening for you. And to have self-compassion and nurture yourself around that so that you are better equipped to give that to others.
I love that. Well, Jen, I just want to say thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast. And I'm so glad that everybody decided to be a butterfly on the wall and listen in on our conversation. I hope everybody enjoyed it. If you did, subscribe. We'll be doing more. And I'm hoping that I'll have Jen on again. That's when you nod and say, yeah, I'm going to be on.
Well, thank you, Janine. This was my first podcast and really fun to just visit with you. It feels very natural and just like our regular conversations. So I appreciate you and all the work you do.
Thank you, and I appreciate you, and I appreciate all of you who are listening in, and we will see you next time.